This session is called Attachment. Attachment is a complicated psychological concept that opens up many fundamental questions about how we form and experience our relationships, not only with other people, but also with the world around us and even with ourselves. The basic idea of attachment is simple. Each of us longs for connection, for a sense of belonging, but this hunger for connection comes with many layers. Sometimes attachment fills us with peace and happiness, but sometimes it also keeps us in shackles that we ourselves are not even aware of. Let's imagine it with an example. Let's try to think of a little person, say a child, who holds onto a teddy bear tightly as if his whole world depended on it. This teddy bear represents security, safety, and perhaps even someone's loving caress. But now imagine that this child grows up, and instead of a teddy bear, his attachment shifts to dysfunctional relationships, destructive patterns of behavior, or the desire to own the latest version of a cell phone because without it, he simply can't breathe. Attachment to things, people, or ideas doesn't always have to be bad. Sometimes it leads us to grow and connect. But if we let it consume us, it can bind us in a vicious cycle of anxiety and fear. Psychologists, and in particular John Bowlby, who first introduced attachment theory, have studied this phenomenon mainly in the context of the relationship between children and their caregivers. He found that the way in which a child perceives his or her closeness to parents or other caregivers significantly influences his or her other relationships in life. A child who has experienced secure, loving attachment usually grows into an individual with greater emotional stability. Conversely, a child who has experienced insecurity or rejection may develop habits that haunt him or her into adulthood, such as fear of abandonment, excessive jealousy, or a desire for control. Now, let's apply this to ourselves and our daily lives. How many of us carry around this unconscious package of learned reactions and patterns from childhood without even realizing it? Attachment lives in all our interactions, deeply ingrained. But attachment is not like attachment. Imagine, for example, a person who is a passionate collector of postcards. Yes, they are still with us. For him, each postcard represents certain memories, stories, or even specific emotions. But if that person were to discover one day that his entire collection had been burned in an unfortunate event, he might feel empty or lost, as if he had lost a piece of himself. Why? Because attachment is deeply connected to our identity, what we own, who we love, or what we believe defines us, and when we lose that, the question arises, who are we? Let alone attachment in relationships. That's an unplowed field. Attachment in relationships can be as gentle as a summer breeze, but also as devastating as a storm. Many of us have found ourselves in a situation where our love for our partner has blinded us so much that we have lost ourselves. How many times have we experienced moments when we were willing to tolerate manipulation, jealousy, maybe even a little guilt, just so we wouldn't lose the person we love? Attachment in these moments creates fear, fear that we won't be good enough, that we will be abandoned, or that we will fail. And this fear, if not tamed, often prevents relationships from developing in a healthy, free way. And then there is attachment to things. Yes, we've all been there. We refuse to throw away an old t-shirt with a hole in it because we bought it with the first money we earned. These objects become symbols of something bigger, but sometimes they drag us down like an anchor. They have such value to us that they hold us back from growing, perhaps because we look at them with meaningless nostalgia. So what to do about it? The answer is not easy, but the path to liberation begins with awareness. Awareness that attachment may not always be a source of joy, stability, and love, but also a tool of fear, anxiety, and stagnation. So how can we be less dependent on our attachments and enjoy life more? Let's focus on exploring our own emotional patterns. For example, we can ask ourselves the questions, where does my attachment come from? How has my past affected me? And most importantly, What could I do differently to make my connection with others in the world around me healthier? Let's look more closely at attachment in relationships. The strong bonds that two human beings form with each other can be amazing and unforgettable. You may feel that you have found your destiny partner, a soulmate who understands you better than anyone else. Sometimes, however, these bonds start to get a little, how to express it more briefly, too tight. And what at first appeared to be a loving harmony can turn into a suffocating dependency full of insecurities and conflicts. You don't believe me? Then join me on an excursion into the world of love and attachment. It's going to be a ride. So let's start from the beginning. Attachment is, of course, natural. From a young age, we learn to form relationships, to rely on others, and to look to them for support. In our romantic relationships, we then carry these patterns over, which can provide us with a sense of stability and security. In an ideal world, these relationships should be balanced. Two people create a space together full of trust, respect, and love, where they provide support for each other but also have their own freedom and opportunity to grow. But the reality is often a bit more complicated. As soon as emotions are involved, especially intense ones like love, passion, or fear of loss, things can get messy. An example is jealousy. Who among us hasn't been in a situation where they felt that someone looked at their loved one too long? Or, when the thought has occurred, what if? What if that colleague at work isn't just a colleague? Yes, this is the moment when your imagination plays like a theater troupe overworked on caffeine. And in this case, please replay the assumptions section. Jealousy may be a natural response to fear of abandonment or loss, but if left unchecked, it can grow into a form that suffocates the relationship rather than giving it room to grow. As a result, one partner may begin requesting more attention, checking phone calls, or silently panicking each time a new individual is present. The result? Distrust. And distrust in a relationship is like sand in the wheels, and so the machine can stop working. Another phenomenon that is closely linked to attachment is emotional dependence. That's when you feel like you're somehow not complete without your partner. It's like your life is a puzzle and your partner is the last piece that just doesn't make sense without. It's not uncommon for one partner to pass on the responsibility for their happiness to the other. They begin to expect their other half to ensure that life is perfect, joyful, and full of meaning. But in practice, this means that the happy partner often bears a huge burden of responsibility, while the other partner unknowingly feels increasingly dissatisfied. Do you think that seems like a recipe for disaster? You're right. And then there are our boundaries, the golden rule of healthy relationships. These seem like a fairly simple concept at first look, don't they? But try enforcing them when you're struck by feelings and the desire to keep the person you love at all costs. Boundaries, or the ability to clearly define what is acceptable to us and what is no longer, are what ensure healthy relationship dynamics. If you have boundaries that are too weak or impenetrable, it can easily happen that you start to lose yourself in the relationship, forgetting about yourself and your own needs. And that's a path that leads directly to frustration. But now you're thinking, what to do with all this? How to untangle this imaginary knot? The first and most important step is to realize that these patterns of behavior exist. When you catch yourself sending that 10th text asking why your partner isn't responding, maybe it's time to stop for a moment and think, is this the kind of love I'm building? It is difficult to be rational in the overwhelm of emotions, but we must honor our own needs and equally acknowledge the needs of the other. Open communication is the key. None of us are mind readers, and talking about our emotions, fears, or expectations can be freeing. Healthy attachment, on the other hand, can be a wonderful foundation for partner life. It's an attachment that doesn't force you to give up your identity, but also makes you feel supported. An attachment where there is trust instead of control, where there is joy in being present instead of fear of loss. An attachment that is not a symbiosis, but a partnership of equals. Finally, let's remember one basic rule. Love is not a prison, but a freedom that has meaning. Let us build relationships where attachment does not mean bondage, but rather the connection of two independent beings who have chosen to stand together, not because one cannot live without the other, but because they simply want to be together. So let's focus together more on why. Even if we understand the above theoretically, the breakup still hurts. You might not like the answer. It's because you simply love with attachment. And in understanding, one is still stuck only in the theoretical part. But that's okay. It's never too late to start. So what happens when the bond loosens? Or, better yet, if we forcibly rip the glue off? Let's face it, there are often sore wounds left and tears dripping in all directions. But how does attachment actually relate to the deep pain we feel after a breakup? Imagine your relationship as a solid structure. Brick by brick, you've built something beautiful together, something you may have quietly melted over at bedtime. It's us against the world, but this can never fall, you think to yourself. But reality is sometimes different than the pink filters on Instagram. And it's that attachment you formed, those shared rituals, that feeling of safety with the other, or maybe your dependence on their jokes, which sometimes weren't even that funny. That's an essential part of that imaginary construct of yours. When the breakup comes, that structure collapses. And you? You're standing on a pile of ruins, crushing broken pieces of brick between your fingers, staring at the disaster. The key to this dynamic is understanding one fundamental thing. Attachment is not just you. It's not just your partner. It's the we that shows up in the relationship. That we forms strong attachments, emotional, physical, and yes, often mental. When a relationship ends, suddenly you have to face the fact that part of your identity, which was we, is gone. And that's where it starts to hurt. It's almost as if you've torn off a part of yourself. Because when you're deeply attached to another person, your identities become intertwined like two cords that are hard to untangle without something tearing as a result. Now, let's face it, it's not just about the other person. It's about the ideas we've associated with them. A future together that will be great, we say. Even the dog we get one day will have a cute snout. But the breakup acts like a giant eraser on a chalkboard, erasing all of this hyper-personal planning. It's no longer just about losing your partner. You're also losing your vision of the future, of where you're going. And look how much it hurts. Another thing that few people realize is the very principle of need. Face it, even the most independent person in the world relies partly on the other for deeper attachment. You may have relied on him or her for support, to make you laugh, or even to help you with the bills because accounting was a Spanish village for you. When the other disappears from your life like steam over a pot, not only do you lose emotional security, you lose some form of practical comfort. Now you have to cook for yourself and tell yourself jokes. And if your sense of humor is tragic, we're in for some pretty sad evenings. But wait, don't despair. These wounds, whether they're wounds to the heart, the ego, or your favorite kitchen routine, are also opportunities. Yes, you may be rolling your eyes right now and find the idea of opportunity in pain as motivating as your Monday alarm clock. But have you heard that pain is often a catalyst for change? Paradoxically, attachment can show you how much you might have surrendered your happiness to another person. And what could be better? Then reclaim control? No, I'm not saying you have to immediately dance barefoot around the living room with a "I'm strong without you" banner. You just have to tell yourself that in the beginning. I'll be fine, even if it doesn't feel like it right now. The collapse of emotion through attachment is like a test. You just rebuild yourself. You get a chance to find out who you are without the other person. And now I'm gonna be rude. You may discover that you are an even better version of yourself without the other. This adventure of discovery may lay the groundwork for something else entirely. Something. Well, let's just say, as blinding as a lightsaber in Star Wars. It's a process, of course. What will happen is that one day you'll be as strong as the Hulk, and the next, you'll feel like melted ice cream. Unrequested advice. Normally, I don't do this, but here, I'm going to try to give you some advice, and it's up to you whether you try it or not. Whatever relationship you're in, never give your identity to the other person. Share, love, enjoy, but stay yourself. Have your boundaries, fulfill your dreams and needs, and communicate. And if you find that you no longer feel comfortable in the relationship, leave. But not emotionally, calmly and with a wish of happiness for the other person. Or conversely, if your partner no longer feels on the same page with you, that's okay too. At this point, all that hurts is a bruised ego, and it has little to do with love. If we love someone, we'll wish them happiness, even if it's without us. Let's dive into practical part. It's called funeral. The ritual of burying an emotion or project is like a private ceremony that allows you to cry out, cry, or dance out everything that is weighing you down. This therapeutic tool brings incredible relief, especially if you feel like life has tripped you up and thrown you to the ground. It's one of those moments when you can say, "Enough. I'm closing the old, opening the new." This ritual guides you through a journey where sadness, disappointment, or frustration becomes part of your healing instead of nesting in your mind as unwanted guests. It is a process that helps you close a chapter in your life and move forward with a lighter heart. Whether it's a breakup with a loved one or someone you loved only in the beginning and then it slipped somewhere else entirely, a job loss, or a project you invested everything in that ultimately ended in failure, this ritual creates a unique space. A space in which you are allowed to express your feelings fully while transforming the negative into something uplifting. It allows you to look at pain from a new perspective and learn to appreciate even the difficult phases of life. It is surprising how much this simple act can change your perspective on a situation. It's like a symbolic full stop to one phase of life and a question mark at the end that motivates you to seek new answers. The place where it all begins. Every ritual needs a suitable atmosphere, and the burial of emotions is no exception. The key part is the choice of location. The most important thing is that you feel relaxed, safe, and free. This is the cornerstone of the whole process. It could be your living room with soft light, an open-air garden, a forest where you'll be with trees rather than people, or a quiet corner of your favorite cafe. Bring elements into the space that remind you of the person, project, or situation you are saying goodbye to. These can be photos, letters, a small charm that once meant something, or anything else that helps you imprint your emotions onto a particular object. Some people have special symbols associated with past relationships, from a teddy bear to old notes. Such elements are not necessarily just a painful memory. On the contrary, in the context of ritual, they serve to channel your emotions as if you were placing them in the hands of the objects in question. When you are finished, you symbolically bury these items. Create a magical feeling of peace and farewell. The atmosphere you create is crucial. Imagine the glow of the candles whose flames reflect your thoughts and feelings. Add the scent of flowers, aromatic candles to fill the room with peace and a kind of sacredness. Music can also work wonders. Play something that carries you deep into your memories. Soft piano pieces, ambient tones, or even your favorite song that doesn't just leave you standing but reminds you of the moment more powerfully than anything else. Feel free to allow yourself to laugh, cry, or just meditate quietly for a while. This ritual is not about any strict rules and restrictions. It's all about you. It's about creating an environment where you feel you can breathe and be honest with yourself. Set everything up so that you feel really comfortable in the situation. Expressing emotion is just the beginning. The funeral process itself begins with an outpouring of emotion. Say everything you have to say. Feel free to write a letter that you can read in which you imprint every tear and smile you have experienced. Describe what this chapter has meant to you, the good and the bad. Don't leave out the details. In the process, you may become aware of things you missed before. This phase is a magical blend of sadness, liberating laughter, and understanding. Yes, you can talk to a teddy bear, for example. We certainly don't condemn it. or just quietly whisper a few sentences about how you were, what went wrong, or conversely, what was beautiful. The actual funeral part. Once you have expressed all the essentials, the actual act of burial comes next. The items you've prepared can be buried, burned, dropped by water, or enclosed in a neat box to be stored somewhere far away to be forgotten. The physical act of letting go, it has astounding power. It's like saying, "I'm ending this. Everything I needed, we've given to each other." Finally, a new era. Celebrating the beginning. When you're done with the ritual, don't forget the last, perhaps most important step. Celebrating new beginnings. For example, cook something good, watch a movie you like, or invite friends over for a nice get-together. This step is symbolic. You are celebrating the courage you have shown and the courage to look forward with hope. And why does it all work? Psychological magic. The ritual of burial has many psychological benefits. It helps bring the closure that is necessary to process the pain. Often we feel the need to put a period behind something that has weighed us down so that we can move on. Ritual offers dot that gives meaning and order to emotional chaos. In addition, a shared ritual, if you choose to perform it in the community, can bring relief from sharing pain and a sense of support. Grief suddenly doesn't seem so isolating. When you share your burden with others, our minds see the pain as justified, which paradoxically brings us relief. In short, the ritual of burying emotions is not just a kind of alternative therapy. It is a tool to help us rediscover balance and courage. So, will you give it a try? Are you ready to bury the old socks of your life and welcome a fresh wind?